Right. Hello. Welcome, everyone. My name is Katie Bellinger, and I am part of the team working with Law Forward on this case. Before we dive in, I want to share some quick background on the case, the plaintiffs, and the structure of today's press briefing. Yesterday evening, a group of students, parents, advocates, educators, school districts, and community members from across the state filed suit against the Wisconsin State Legislature and its Joint Finance Committee for failing to adequately fund public schools across Wisconsin. The 19 plaintiffs, led by the Wisconsin PTA, are asking the court to hold the legislature accountable for not meeting its constitutionally mandated obligation to provide all children with an equal opportunity for education. The list of plaintiffs includes five school districts from around the state, four education unions, two statewide education advocacy organizations, and eight individuals, which includes teachers, parents, students, and community members. Rosa will be dropping a link, a list of the plaintiffs in the chat. The plaintiffs are represented by the Madison-based nonprofit Law Forward in partnership with Wisconsin Education Association Council, or WEAC. Today's press briefing, you're going to hear more specifics about the case from Jeff Mandel, President and General Counsel at Law Forward. You'll then hear from four people who are directly involved in the case. A parent, a teacher, a superintendent, and a leader in the Wisconsin PTA. I'll introduce each person individually before they speak. After they do so, we'll have about 20 minutes for questions, and then Jeff will close us out. If you have any questions while Jeff or other people are speaking, please drop them in the Q&A box. I will be moderating those questions when we get to the Q&A section. And so, with that, I would now like to introduce Jeff Mandel. Jeff is the founder and now president and general counsel of Law Forward, a nonprofit legal advocacy organization dedicated to defending and advancing democracy in Wisconsin through strategic litigation. Under his leadership, Law Forward has achieved major litigation victories, including leading the Clark v. Wisconsin Education's or Wisconsin Elections Commission challenge that helped overturn extreme partisan gerrymandered state legislative maps and secure fairer districts used in the 2024 elections, held fake electors accountable for attempts to overturn the 2020 presidential results, and pursued ongoing challenges to anti-competitive congressional maps and other efforts that protect voting rights and ballot access. Without further ado, I will turn it over to Jeff.
Thanks, Katie, and thank you all for coming and being here today. This is a really exciting day, and this is something that is deeply felt and deeply personal for many of us. I'm a child of a public school educator. I'm a product of public schools. Public schools are the cornerstone of our democracy, and we are so proud and humbled to be able to do this today. I want to thank all of our plaintiffs who are really bravely, courageously standing up for what is right for students and for Wisconsinites. Our school districts and our communities that we're representing here, as Katie outlined, it's a cross section of these communities. So we have two statewide organizations, and then we have five school districts. And in each of those districts, we also have the local teachers union and individual parents, students, and educators. Those districts, since I'm sure all of you are eager to know, are Adams Friendship, Beloit, Eau Claire, Green Bay, and Nisida. And you're going to get to hear from some individuals from those places as part of this briefing, so that you can hear about how important this is and what the story is. I'd also like to thank WEAC, who are our co-counsel in this case, representing the teachers unions and the teachers. They're an important part of this. We filed last night in the Circuit Court for Eau Claire County. And the case will proceed there. This is a constitutional challenge to the deficiency of the state public finance system for our schools. This is not a new problem. This is a problem that has been going on for decades. This is a problem that has come to the Wisconsin courts in the past. The most recent case was Vincent v. Voight in the year 2000. But in the 25 years since then, things have gotten considerably worse. And we are at a point where, for many districts, as you'll hear today, they are on the verge of crisis. The claims in this case are all constitutional ones. From the birth of our state, we have valued as a state public education. Article 10 of our state constitution is about public schools. Article 10, Section 3 of our Constitution expressly makes it the obligation of the legislature to create and maintain public schools around the state that provide every student between the ages of 4 and 20 in the state of Wisconsin an equal opportunity for a sound basic education with a character of instruction that's as uniform as practicable. That simply isn't happening. Our courts have explained that the purpose of that sound basic education is to prepare our young people to be productive and active participants in our society. And the funding that the state is providing for schools is making it impossible for school districts to fully prepare those students. It is not a situation where things are just a little bit problematic and we are running to court. This is a situation that, as I said, has been going on for decades, and where, despite the heroic efforts of everyone involved, from school boards to district administrators to principals and school administrators to classroom teachers to support staff to students and parents and community members who volunteer, despite those heroic efforts, it is just those heroic efforts, in fact, that have held our schools together as long as they've made it under this deficient funding. But it's not enough. These folks are not magicians. They are not Rumpelstiltskin. They cannot turn straw into gold. And we do not have what we need for our schools to thrive. So we're bringing six claims here. Four of them are rooted in Article 10, Section 3 of the state constitution. The first says that the finance system is deficient so that students across the state are not getting the opportunity that they are guaranteed to a sound basic education. The second of them says that the finance system is deficient such that students around the state are not getting what they are guaranteed by the Constitution, which is an education where the character of instruction across the state is as nearly uniform as practical. The third claim, also under Article 10, Section 3, focuses on high-need students. That is, as the Wisconsin Supreme Court defined it in Vincent v. Voight, that includes students with disabilities, English language learners, and students from severe economic disadvantage. So the third claim is that those students under the current finance system are not getting their opportunity, their equal opportunity for a sound basic education. The fourth claim, also under Article 10, Section 3, is about the way that the state reimburses schools for special education services, which they are mandated by federal and state law to provide. The state specifically and knowingly underfunds and undercompensates schools for those services so that schools are constantly stuck in this impossible decision about whether to provide those services that are mandated by law and thereby pull money away from the general education fund that serves all students and makes sure that all students are getting as much as they can get toward their constitutionally guaranteed education, or whether it should keep that money in the general fund and thereby violate the law in a different way and underfund special education. We have two additional constitutional claims. One is with regard to those high-need students and how their guarantee of equal protection under the law is violated by the deficient school finance system that we have here in Wisconsin. Our state constitution guarantees everyone equal protection of the laws, and yet our high-need students are not getting the same protection and the same rights that our other students are getting. And the last claim is under our maintenance of free government clause. Our Constitution guarantees that Wisconsin will forever have a free government, and that as part of that, we will look back to first principles. There might be no clearer first principle in the state of Wisconsin than the importance of public education, which was true here and validated here before statehood, when we were part of the Northwest Territory, through the territorial government, from our constitutional conventions in the 1840s, and then through our laws ever since. But we're not respecting that today, and we're asking the court to hold the legislature to its obligation and its responsibilities and say that what is happening here violates the Constitution. With that, I'm going to stop and pass it back to Katie so that you can hear from some of our brave plaintiffs about the issues in their communities specifically. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jeff. Our first speaker will be Shane McDonough, who's a special education teacher and parent in the Green Bay Area Public School District. Shane is also a plaintiff in the case. Thank you for joining us today, Shane.
Katie, thank you for that introduction. I would also like to thank everyone who's in attendance today or will be listening to this and watching this at a later time and date. I'm a public educator. I chose this vocation. I have three children who are in the public school system. My eldest receives special education services. I would be remiss if I didn't also recognize that I was taught in the public schools here in the state of Wisconsin, and I'm grateful for the education I received. I think what makes me most proud to be an educator and a parent and a member of the community in Green Bay Area Public School District is our commitment to every child. All means all in Green Bay. Despite the increased challenges that we faced as staff and as families and as a community, I take pride in knowing that I've seen firsthand how schools operate. I've seen firsthand how schools bravely and honorably serve our students and families every day. I look at the social and emotional needs of our students, and I would say that we have done the best with what we've been given, but there's tremendous pressure and there is tremendous need that's currently in our school district and beyond. Another source of pride that I feel in this community is found in the teachers, the staff, the administrators, the students that show up every day and are committed to helping one another to succeed. Schools today do far more than deliver education or specialized services, academics. They create a sense of belonging, a sense of community. I think that we must continue to create and cultivate safe spaces where students are valued, and this is something our community should never take for granted. Schools are gathering places as well. They support working families, they provide meals, mental health services, and supports, and we host community events that help shape responsible citizens in the state of Wisconsin and beyond. Strong schools strengthen local economies, property values, and community pride. Even residents without school-aged children benefit immensely from a healthy public school system. I look at the situation in Green Bay, where we have had to consolidate and close a number of our schools, where we have had to do some staff consolidation as well, and looking at what's facing us in the very near future. It's a very present situation. And I felt a calling, a need to speak out and advocate for those in our community who are our most fragile, including my son. I would also like to share a moment with all of you as a parent, not just an educator. Having a child with special needs is not easy. When we rely upon our schools to provide not only essential academics, but social, emotional learning, and providing them with the skills necessary to be successful beyond high school, I think of vocational skill development. For 10 years, I served as the work experience coordinator here in Green Bay, where I was out in the community helping students with special needs advance their skills and lead to permanent placement and lasting careers in vocational skill opportunities. I believe that the budget that we are facing is, we're at a critical point. And I don't want to sound overly dramatic or ominous. I want to keep this hopeful and positive. But I felt compelled to join this litigation and join this because of what we face. I think I don't want to be too verbose, but if I have to be frank with everyone, if staff and services are going to be cut, the loss would be deeply felt. Students who need consistency and specialized attention would be impacted first. Larger caseloads and fewer supports mean less individualized attention, fewer opportunities for inclusion, and increased stress for students and families and staff. These cuts don't just affect academics. They affect a child's sense of belonging and long-term independence and success. I believe that it is time for us to address the needs that exist in our public schools, and I want to thank you for your time.
Shane, thank you so much for your incredibly heartfelt and moving remarks and for sharing your perspective with all of us. Our next speaker will be Tanya Kutlowski, who is the superintendent for the Nisida Area School District, one of the five school districts that have brought this case against the state. Thank you for joining us today, Superintendent Kutlowski. And you are on mute.
I am Tanya Kitlowski, and it is a humble opportunity to be here today representing our school board, the children of our Nisida school community, our families, staff, and our taxpayers. During my 31 years in public education and also as a product of public education, there have been many times where I have sat back and waited patiently and hopeful. But there were times when my silence was just easier than taking action. There are also moments when you feel compelled due to just faithful love and service. It requires courage. And right now, at this moment, is one of those times. So today, I'm standing in front of you supporting my Nisida school community. And with a lot of love and admiration, other school districts around the state of Wisconsin that are suffering the very same burdens we are and the same struggles we are experiencing. For years, our school district has been proactive in sharing and communicating. We have attended and provided testimony to state committee meetings. Our board has passed resolutions and shared them throughout. We have met with local legislators. We have shared correspondence and things with local elected officials. But despite all of those efforts, the funding system has not kept up with the needs of our children and the needs of our current realities. It is through faithful stewardship today that we move forward with litigation. We are currently facing our third operational referendum in our small Nisida community. I am so blessed that our school community has shown such love and commitment to our children to fund them for the last 8 years. And again, they're being asked again in April. However, our small community represents a very high property value, but our demographics and our local taxpayers are of fixed and low income. Over the past decade, we have been underfunded in special education by over $13 million just in 10 years. Our local referendum, some would argue or could argue, has been 100% funding that mandated legal constitutional obligation. In addition, if you consider the underfunding of inflationary increases, had we been given annual incremental inflationary increases, we would have over $2 million more today in this year's budget, and we wouldn't be on the ballot again for the third time in April. Furthermore, The current funding policy in the state of Wisconsin has zero consideration for the needs of our children. We have children in high poverty school district coming from homes with drug addictions. We have children coming from sexual abuse, physical and emotional neglect, a lot of needs that are coming out of our children and our households today. We have children coming who cannot eat with utensils yet. They aren't potty trained by kindergarten. And yet, some of our children are coming to us very socially adequate and coming to us with 2,500 word vocabulary or more, while others are at 100 or 200. Current funding policy in our state only focuses on numbers, not needs. Unmet constitutional obligations shifts the burden of the financial need to local taxpayers on the back of referendum after referendum after referendum. I believe championing children, advocating for taxpayers, should not be competing priorities. They should be shared responsibilities by all. And when one is weakened, the other is affected. Our children, our precious children, are the most important asset on our planet. Attending public schools should not be compromised by political will or conflicting priorities. These are our state's children. When you feel constitutional obligations are going unmatched, litigation feels like the next step. So today I humbly stand with our children, our school board, our staff, our families, and our local taxpayers. It's time for the priority of championing children and advocating for taxpayers to unite. Strong public schools mean strong local communities, and strong local communities mean a very strong state. And when we put strong states together, we have a strong America. This litigation is a call for hope, justice, and truly a stewardship for children and our communities. The time is now to unite and make things right for our kids. Thank you. Katie, back to you.
Oh, Katie, I think you're muted.
Now it's my turn to be on mute. Thank you so much, Superintendent Kotlowski, for your really thoughtful remarks that highlight so clearly the importance of this litigation for our children. Thank you very much for your bravery and your district's bravery in standing up. We're going to turn now to Joshua Miller, who is a parent in the Eau Claire Area School District. Both Joshua and his daughter, Avi, are plaintiffs in this case. Thank you for joining us today, Joshua.
Certainly, Katie, it's good to be here. Good morning, everyone. My name is Joshua Miller, and my kid Avi is a sophomore in the Eau Claire Area School District at Memorial High School. I've joined as a plaintiff in this lawsuit against the state legislator because for far too long, the lawmakers in Madison have been negligent to provide their duties to have a quality, well-funded education for the students in Wisconsin. One example of this in my community of Eau Claire was the need for a capital referendum just back in 2022. My kid was attending South Middle School, a school that was in such bad shape that out of the $100 million approved by the referendum, this one school got $40 million of funds for capital improvements. South Middle School had dozens of rooms with no natural lighting, a year-round need for dehumidifiers, a cramped lunchroom, and decaying infrastructure, to name just a few of the problems. The school had opened in 1982 and it was sagging under 40 years of use and having no major renovations done to it in that time period. Now, we were fortunate in Eau Claire that that referendum passed with 64% of the vote. Families with students in Eau Claire are fortunate to live in a city where support for public education is strong, but there are communities across the state, like we've heard from Shane in Green Bay and others that, unnamed here, where the voters had not necessarily approved the funds needed for their schools. But that shouldn't be the case. It shouldn't be a case of haves and have-nots, depending on where you live in the state, what your voters decide, how you can bring a referendum if you can, and if it gets approved. A public school should not have to go to the voters with that request. The state legislator must meet the needs of our children and our schools, and they have not been doing so. Another example of hardships was created just this past fall when the Eau Claire School Board announced a proposal where one of the core neighborhood elementary schools was planned to be closed. And of those schools, the most likely candidate was Flint Elementary School, my neighborhood school, where Avi had gone to as an elementary student. And when this plan was announced, parents came out in force to the school board meeting after school board meeting for weeks and weeks, months and months, driving home their fears and concerns about the proposal, about how busing would affect, how the boundary changes would affect, and how the fabric of the neighborhood would be affected. I do trust that the school board didn't come to that proposal lightly, but in doing so would have been a tear in the fabric of our community. Each neighborhood needs an elementary school where parents can walk with their kids and meet fellow neighbors, where students can ride their bikes and be friends on the playground. And this is where a sense of belonging to the community grows, where a sense of civic pride comes from, where our children, bond with people. And closing these schools, consolidating, having to have students bus to other schools where they're going to perhaps schools your kids 3 blocks down are going to a different school, it rips the fabric of communities. The closure proposal was presented partially because the state legislator has divided the policy that would financially reward districts that consolidate schools. That seems backwards to me. Instead of funding the schools we have, they want to incentivize reducing the number of schools that serve our children, our families, and our communities. In Eau Claire, our school board found a workaround for now, and Flint is currently staying open. But unless the budget formula changes, I think they just pushed off what may be inevitable and has already taken place at countless school districts across the state. Budgets reflect priorities. What you say you want to spend money on shows what you care about. Ever since 2019, the state has had a budget surplus in the billions of dollars, but they continue to be stingy with our public schools. Our schools have to scrape by year after year after year, slimming down, reducing, getting smaller and smaller, what they can do, what they can offer. The dire need for adequate funding has been made clear to the lawmakers, but they have re refused to heed our pleas. The situation is sad, absurd, and infuriating. Wisconsin's current school finance system is broken. And this lawsuit, which I am proud to join, would be a way for the courts to force the legislator to make a new system that works and actually meets the needs of the students of Wisconsin. So I am very proud that me as a parent and my kid as a student have joined this lawsuit. And we are just, one parent, one family across the state, and we speak for tens of thousands of other people in the same situation. So I thank you for your time, and I'll pass it back to Katie.
Thank you so much, Joshua, and for sharing the personal implications and impacts that this is having on you and your kiddo. We are now going to turn to Kim Anderson from the Wisconsin PTA. Kim is the legislative chair, and the PTA is a statewide organization working to advocate for children and families. The Wisconsin PTA is also a plaintiff in this case. Thank you for joining us today, Kim.
Hello, thanks for having me. Our PTA was very enthusiastic about becoming plaintiffs and participating in this litigation because this litigation very closely follows what our mission statement is, which is to engage and empower parents and communities to advocate on behalf of all children. We are the oldest and largest child advocacy group in the country. And our Wisconsin PTA has been around for over 100 years. Our organization represents children, families, and educators across the state. We have over 100 units in over 30 districts. And since the revenue rate was uncoupled from the inflation rate, I think around in 2010, most of our units are in districts that have had to go to operational referenda to support their operational costs in those districts. With fully funded schools, some of the things that we could see that we have not been seeing are educators receiving paychecks that are commensurate with their professional levels, students that are receiving support that they need desperately. Sorry, I lost my place. Well-funded schools will help us retain the staff that we have and help them receive training that they need to educate and support our children. When public schools are well funded, our children will grow academically and emotionally. When public schools are well funded, class sizes are smaller and more manageable. When public schools are well funded, teachers, we, sorry, this is redundant. Our community is more well able to support our children and teachers. And when public schools are well funded, excellent programs are retained and improved. When public schools are well funded, the curriculum is updated to engage our children. When public schools are well funded, buildings are maintained so that emergency repairs will decrease. When public schools are well funded, technology is protected with updates and improved to support our children's teacher and families. When public schools are well funded by the states, communities can thrive. Strong schools lead to strong communities. And our rally cry has been happening for decades to better fund our public education system in the state of Wisconsin. We need to tell legislators to fully fund our public schools. I'll hand it back to Katie.
Thank you so much, Kim. And thank you for really underscoring what is possible if public schools were fully funded. Now I would like to open up for questions. And so folks can drop questions into the Q&A and I will moderate as well.
While we wait for questions, Katie, can I just amplify a few of the things we heard from our plaintiffs? I just want to note a few things. You heard from both Joshua and Kim about operational referenda. And one of the things you'll find in the complaint is how the school finance system has taken has put the burden on local taxpayers to pay the operating expenses of our schools. We used to have referenda when a school district needed a new building or needed capital expenses. And those were fairly rare, and taxpayers were usually really understanding and generous and enthusiastic. But what we're seeing now is a system where school districts have no choice but to go to referendum regularly to try to fund basic operations, to keep the lights on and to keep payroll flowing. And it's really a tremendous problem. One of our plaintiff school districts is Beloit, where you can read about in the complaint how in the last several years they have repeatedly had referenda fail. I also just want to highlight Superintendent Kutlowski, who talked about shepherding, being a good shepherd of taxpayer funds. And really, I think echoed something that's super important, which is that this is not, none of us is itching to sue the legislature about this. None of us takes this lightly or thinks that this is about politics. This is a moment of last resort. And you can find in the complaint, you know, I think all of our plaintiffs and all of the school districts around the state really, as I said before, have gone to heroic lengths. But I urge you all to look in the complaint and read about the steps that Superintendent Kutlowski has taken to try to make Nisita keep working, taking on multiple jobs within the district so that she doesn't have to fill other positions, asking that her own salary be frozen so that there's a little bit more money for the schools. This is a perfect example. And we know that one of the responses to this lawsuit is going to be more money's not the issue. But I urge you to look through the complaint. You will find example after example and detail after detail about how money really is the issue and the tremendous efforts that people are making. All right, I see that questions have filled into the queue, so I'm going to stop.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jeff. And you gave us some time to get the questions and start organizing them. So the first question is, the lawsuit asks the court to adopt a new finance system that meets the needs of districts unless the legislature and governor enact one first in a timely fashion. How would you define timely fashion?
It's a great question, and the court will have a lot to do with that. But keep in mind that we fund our public schools through the biennial budget process. So I would say that once the court reaches a ruling, ideally it will give the legislature the opportunity to do a better job in the next biennial budget process. And if the legislature and the governor don't deliver on that, don't heed the court's instructions, then that's when we might have to ask the court to step in further.
All right, we've got a two-part question here, Jeff. How exactly will a declaratory, sorry, judgment from a court help the funding issue? What actions would you expect from lawmakers to a declaratory judgment?
So a declaratory judgment is when the court tells, others, the public, and policymakers, what the Constitution means. And so, what we're asking the court to do is to step in and say to the legislature, what you're doing isn't good enough. It doesn't meet your constitutional obligations. And I would fully expect, in a functioning democracy like we have here in Wisconsin, that the legislature would take that very seriously and would then, try to bring state law into compliance with the Constitution based on what the court has said. So we really do believe that if the court explains where the shortfalls are and why this is unconstitutional, the legislature will respond. We because we have a democratic form of government with a set with separated powers, it's not up to the court to decide exactly how we should fund our public schools. There are almost an infinite number of options for how the legislature could do this. But what we're asking the court to do is to look at it and say to the legislature, not good enough, try again, and give a little bit of guidance on the parameters for that, what the Constitution puts in place. And then we do expect that the legislature and the governor will do their jobs.
All right, our next question. Lawmakers and the governor have been discussing school funding and property tax relief. They haven't come to a compromise yet, but Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says that there could be action in an extraordinary session. How do those discussions affect the decision to file the lawsuit? And are there actions that lawmakers could take in the coming months to make this lawsuit unnecessary?
It's a great question. There are constantly, and certainly right now, there are discussions going on about directing more money to our schools from the surplus. And those conversations, as I have followed them, appear to have two aspects. One is about directing more money to special education to make good on the promise that was made in this last budget to try to step up the reimbursement rate to 42 cents on the dollar, and then next year 45 cents on the dollar, which is what the legislature promised it was aiming at. But in reality, because the needs keep going up, the reimbursement rate is only going to be 35 cents on the dollar, approximately, based on the money that the legislature put in. So there's talk about putting some more money into boosting that. The governor has also asked for more money for general student aid, and that would certainly help. What I can say is that this is not, as I've said several times, this is not a problem that arose overnight. It has developed over decades, and it's not a problem that will be solved overnight. Any deal that the legislature and the governor might reach could help move things in the right direction, but is not going to solve the problem. I think what the governor asked for and the legislative leadership so far has said is not acceptable to them is $450 million in additional general state aid. What I can tell you is that the complaint explains that we are funding state aid to our public school districts this year is $2 billion less than the inflation adjusted number from 2009.
So building on that, we've got a question here about the complaint. As I understand it, the suit doesn't seek a specific dollar amount from the state to make the school finance system constitutional. Is that correct? And do you have a ballpark figure of what would be a reasonable number to be constitutional?
The suit doesn't name a specific dollar amount, and that's really what the suit is about, is helping a court fully explain and delve into how the finance system works, what the needs are, and to make some of those decisions. We're not going to prejudge that or put a number on that.
And then building on your comments around Governor Evers, we have a question. Considering Governor Evers has signed the last four state budgets and most recently agreed to a budget deal with no increase for general equalized funding, why is he also not a defendant?
Well, the legislature and the Joint Finance Committee specifically are the defendants because the Constitution charges the legislature with creating and funding our schools. The governor cannot appropriate money without the legislature. The governor can't just hand money out. And appropriations begin, that process begins in the legislature. So we have sued the legislature here because that's the party the Constitution puts this responsibility on.
Thank you. All right, next question. Do you expect more districts to join, and why are Milwaukee, Racine, and Madison not involved?
All 421 districts in Wisconsin face their own challenges, and many of them are severe. We probably could have written this complaint and written about almost any district in the state. We looked to work with communities that were geographically and demographically diverse to help highlight how this is a statewide problem and how they deal with and face different challenges, all of which come back to the root problem of an insufficient school funding mechanism that isn't taking student need into account. It's hard to know exactly how much money, right, when you because we need to figure out what the student needs are. That's what should be driving this conversation rather than abstract numbers. So it's not that we left any districts out or pushed any districts away. We chose districts and communities that we thought helped highlight the problem. It is possible that additional districts will reach out and want to join the case, and we'll figure that out as we go.
All right. Next question. Republican lawmakers at the Capitol have frequently blamed Governor Evers' 400-year veto for inaction on education funding and for increasing property taxes. Can someone speak to why more action is needed on school funding beyond the $325 per pupil increase from that veto?
Sure. So we have had in the state of Wisconsin, the finance system has been built on the idea of a revenue limit. That is a cap on how much each district can spend per student. That's been in law since 1993. And that cap is different district to district and significantly different and somewhat arbitrarily is based on what they were spending before the caps went into place. So Eau Claire, for example, is a very low revenue limit district. Other places have higher revenue limits. When those revenue limits were put in place, they, and I think this is almost common sense, they automatically adjusted every year for inflation because the costs to the schools went up under inflation. And so we made sure that the amount that the schools could spend per student went up. In 2009, we ended that. And the revenue limits have not had an automatic increase for inflation since 2009. That's one of the reasons, as I said before, that in inflation-adjusted dollars, state aid is $2 billion lower today than it was in 2009. And in fact, in 2011, rather than increase those revenue limits were cut substantially by about by more than $500 per student, which, you know, on a percentage basis is a significant cut, 4 or 5% maybe. The governor's veto, what it does is it allows districts to increase that revenue limit by $325 per year. That's less than the rate of inflation. And every year, because that number is the same every year it becomes an even smaller percentage as the revenue limits go up. So that is not alone enough to fix the problem. And I understand there's a big political debate about that veto and about that mechanism. We don't have a position on this. What we're saying is that the school funding mechanism is not sufficient and is unconstitutional, even with that the current law, which includes that veto.
All right, we've got five more questions to get through. The next one is, what can local community members expect, and what will legislators be looking at in the community's response to this lawsuit and unfolding situation?
Well, I mean, the wheels of justice grind slowly, as you all who have watched this kind of litigation before know. And so I think local community members can expect that in the short term, hopefully this lawsuit is going to build more conversation, and the Fund Wisconsin Public Schools Coalition, working in partnership with the lawsuit, is going to fund greater public discussion. And as well as sort of the ongoing policy debate that was referenced earlier, there is already a topic of public discussion, and hopefully this is going to add to it and help inform it further. But things are not going to change immediately or overnight. And we believe that public schools are one of these issues that cut across demographics, that cut across politics, that cut across ideology. We all share a commitment to our kids and to our future, as Superintendent Kotlowski talked about. And it is really my hope that what we're going to see in our communities, the five communities that are plaintiffs here, but also in our communities across Wisconsin, is broad support for doing better for our kids and our schools.
Right. Next question. Can you talk more about the precedent for this kind of lawsuit?
Sure. So I think when we talk about the precedent for this kind of lawsuit, we're really talking about two different things. One is school finance lawsuits in general, and that is not a super rare thing, unfortunately. In just recent months, there have been successful lawsuits saying that the state funding mechanisms are insufficient and violate the state constitutions in Kentucky, in New Hampshire, in Wyoming. Note, by the way, these are not notably blue or red. You know, these are states with different politics and different needs and different histories. There's been a case in the last couple of years in Pennsylvania. There was a case in Arizona. So there's that kind of precedent that around the country, we see these lawsuits, and we see these lawsuits succeeding under their state constitutions. And then the second kind of precedent would be about our own state of Wisconsin precedent. This is not the first time that school funding has gone to our courts. The most recent time, as I mentioned earlier, was in 2000 in the Vincent v. Voight case. And the Supreme Court said some very important things in Vincent v. Voight, including talking about the constitutional guarantee for every student in Wisconsin to have an equal opportunity to access an adequate basic education, a sound basic education. And it talked about how that needed to be tailored to every student, that our schools need to meet the needs of individual kids. It's not enough to say, well, we're providing a sound basic education for the average kid. And if there are kids who have certain struggles that make it hard for them to take advantage of that, that's on them. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has been very clear. That's not the way it works. We meet kids where they are, and we make sure that every child has the opportunity that they personally need to get a sound basic education. We're trying to build on that. In 2000, when the court decided Vincent v. Voight, it articulated that broad principle. And when it came to the finance part, it said we don't really need to get into the details of that because whatever the requirements are, the system is okay right now. It is constitutional, it's not perfect. But it's not so bad as to be unconstitutional. We think that 25 years later, and keep in mind, 25 years is two full generations of school children, right? Kids are in school for 13 years. So two full cycles of school children have gone through. The system is in much, much, much more dire straits. And that's why we're doing this.
All right, our next question is something that I think some of our other plaintiffs could also address. And
Sure.
Superintendent Kotlowski, I'm looking at you first, maybe to take this question on. So we have a question about how aware are people in your community of this issue, and what is their typical response?
Katie, I am so sorry. Could you just repeat that one more time?
Yeah, absolutely. How aware are people in your community of this issue, and what is their typical response when they learn what's going on?
Yeah. Because we're pressing into our third operational referendum this April, our community has become much more deeply aware of a larger systemic state issue. I believe there are still just that emotional, pockets of just frustration because I live in a very, poverty-stricken area where we have fixed and low-income residents. I think there is a burden that we're asking them to pick up that is not adequate. And so certainly there is emotion, regardless of their knowledge, because it's asking them to open their pocketbooks once again. But we are forming, an alliance group with our taxpayers to really help educate and to help inform and to help them be better advocates for themselves. And we start that work this next month. So I think that there's enough awareness that we're getting momentum for a group of individuals that really want to play a part and be an active participant in the decisions around the state that are going to take place around funding public schools.
Thank you, Superintendent. Would any of other plaintiffs like to weigh in on what you're hearing from your communities?
Sure, Katie, I'll
Joshua.
speak up.
Great.
Yes, when I was speaking earlier, I talked about we had in 2022 a capital referendum that passed and that allowed my kids' middle school to be renovated. I didn't even mention that in 2024, we passed a 4-year operational referendum also in Eau Claire to fund specific programs that, as Tanya said earlier, are mandated by the state. And in Eau Claire right now, there's a strong recognition that the schools are inadequately funded by the legislature. That's proven by a 64% in both the referendum, exactly 64% voted for the referendum, which is wonderful news for me here in Eau Claire. But unfortunately, other districts across the state don't have the same voters answering the same questions and giving the same support. And those who didn't support it, you hear stuff like, the school needs to live within their means, budget for themselves. But it's a difference in understanding between what personal finances and school and state financing looks like. And then once you educate them on how the formula works and how it's broken, how it's not keeping up, they see, oh yeah, there's nothing the schools can do. They are at the mercy of the legislator. It's very easy to educate people on the core of the problem with just a short conversation. And once you do that, I find very positive engagement after that.
Thank you, Joshua. I'm going to go to our next question, which is back to you, Jeff. What kind of response do you expect from the legislature and joint finance once they find out about the lawsuit?
I'm not a legislator. Let me not try to prognosticate what they're going to do. Let me instead say what I think, what I would hope for. I would hope that the legislature and individual legislators would look at a lawsuit like this, would review what these five districts and communities are saying and what they're going through, and would say, this is something that we need to figure out. And we might have different views about how to do it, but we need to get to the bottom of this. As I said earlier, this is a problem that's been going on for a long time. This is a problem that goes beyond partisanship and politics. During when Governor Walker was in office, there was a blue ribbon commission that was created to study this school finance problem and spent a year going around the state, listening to people, talking to people, studying the issue, and made a whole bunch of recommendations, most of which have still not been heeded or taken seriously. Certainly, Governor Evers and the legislature have had significant disagreements about how to fund education. And I should note there was a question earlier about the 400-year veto and the $325 that increased the revenue limit every year. There's nothing about that veto that raises property taxes necessarily. It could be paid for with state aid when it's not paid for with state aid, as in the 25 to 27 biennial budget, which has no increase in general state aid. Then districts have the opportunity to raise that revenue limit because they need the money. And if it's not coming from state aid, then it comes out of property taxes. So there are lots of problems here. There are lots of complexities here. And what I would hope is that the members of the Joint Finance Committee and all members of the legislature would see this as a little bit of a wake-up call and an opportunity to engage in this public discussion and really try to solve this problem that we all care about.
All right. Well, we are coming down on time. So, if we don't get to a question that you have asked, we are happy to follow up with you on this. And we're going to try to get to both, but I'm just saying we may not have time for both questions. So the next one is, if things need fixing immediately, why wait? Why file this in a circuit court and when whatever is decided will likely be appealed?
Sure. That's just a, I understand that over the last several years, we as a state have seen many, many things solved through original actions. Those are lawsuits that are filed directly in the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. But those are really only appropriate for very narrow class of cases. The Supreme Court has said repeatedly, including as recently as this summer, that it doesn't want cases that have big fact questions brought to them as original actions. That's not what the Supreme Court is for. And this case has a tremendous amount of facts. What's really important is what's happening on the ground in our schools. The court is going to need to master the school finance system, which is mind-bogglingly complex. And the court is going to need to hear from our plaintiffs and from other stakeholders in that system. This would not really be an appropriate case to go straight to the Supreme Court.
All right, thank you very much. So I think we're going to move into closing remarks. And I just want to say for anyone who has other questions, please email media at fund Wisconsin Public, actually fundwipublicschools.org. That's media at fundwipublicschools.org. And we'll do our best to get back to you ASAP. Thank you all so much for being here. I'm going to hand it back to Jeff to do some closing remarks and we will wrap up.
I just also want to thank everyone for being here. I want to thank Katie and her team for the tremendous work they've done. I want to thank again our plaintiffs, certainly our four speakers today, who I think really eloquently and clearly illustrated the variety of problems and the depth of the problems, but all of our plaintiffs and all of the communities that have been willing to stand up to protect children in Wisconsin and say that we have to find a way to fix this. This is not, as I said earlier, this is not taken lightly. This is a really serious and really kind of somber thing that we're doing, as Superintendent Kutlowski, I think, underscored. But it could not be more important. And so I'm really proud to get to stand with these folks. I'm really proud to get to do this work. And I know that the reporters on this call have the complaint. But it and other materials are available at fundwipublicschools.org. And this is the first step on a long journey, and we really appreciate your attention.